Jabba is an attorney for the Institute of Justice, and I only used your first name because, honestly, I don't want to offend you by trying to pronounce your last name. So could you tell us your last name?
Yeah, sure. So obviously you wouldn't be the first to mispronounce it or to not even bother trying. It's Jabba Titsuashvili, and like you said, I am an attorney at the Institute for Justice. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. How have you been dealing with everything that we see published every day? You probably have an insider view, but some of us look at what is happening and where we are sending people, and we just don't know how to respond or what to do about it.
Yeah, I think like everybody else, we over here are kind of drinking from the same fire hose, right? Of constant updates and new information and new cases and frankly, kind of new outrages. And like you said, there was a case yesterday concerning what are known as third country removals, which are basically situations where we have people here who are in immigration detention, immigration custody, but for some reason or another, can't be returned to their country of origin. And so we have these processes for conducting what are known as these third country removals, like you said.
How is it they cannot be returned? If you are from Mexico, how could you possibly be sent to El Salvador?
Yeah, so it really comes down to whether they have a fear of being returned to their home country, for example, because they might face torture or some sort of other reprisals there. In fact, if you look at this very case, there was a gentleman who was actually sent back to his home country where he had established in the immigration courts here that he faced a credible fear of being tortured there, and yet the government sent him back there anyway.
So how many of these people have legal representation? As an attorney for the Institute for Justice, you guys must be stretched thin, and we see these deportations happening at an alarming rate. Do these people even have access to have their case heard or someone available to represent them?
That really, I think, gets at the crux of the issue here, which is what these cases kind of boil down to is, do you even get afforded enough time to try to find a lawyer and try to establish your case? Because really what the government is doing in these cases is they're trying to deport people so quickly that they don't have any opportunity to really assert the rights that they are given by statute, by our Constitution. And it's this kind of fundamental notion that when the government is going to subject you to take some sort of action against you, you have this due process right that we think of as the right to notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. Now, if you are told, hey, we're deporting you to a third country that you've never been to before in 6 hours, do you really have a meaningful opportunity to be heard to say, hey, I might have some fears about being tortured in that third country? I think the answer is no. And so that's really the crux of these cases. It's not, to some extent, really even about how these issues will ultimately come out for any individual deportee. It's, do they have this basic constitutional guarantee of an opportunity to make their case and say, no, please don't send me there?
And why are we signing contracts with places like South Sudan? I know that's one of the places that the administration wants to send people. It seems to me, if you are sending someone to East Africa, the price to send them there has to be immensely greater than sending them back to their home country if they are not opposed or at risk.
Yeah, it really kind of boggles the mind, frankly, because some of these countries, including, like you said, South Sudan, are places where the U.S. has these extreme travel advisories and says to our own citizens, don't go there. It's dangerous. And in Libya, for example, there was an uprising when some of the people there heard that some of our deportees were coming. So this conduct is actually exacerbating some of the strife in some of these countries that we're trying to send people to. So I couldn't tell you what they're thinking when they're making these designations. But at the end of the day, putting aside the wisdom of it, what this really all comes down to is everybody here has this basic guarantee of due process, and they need to be able to avail themselves of these statutes, which give them those rights, which give them the opportunity to say that I should not be sent to this particular place. And that really is what the government is fighting in these cases. And it's disturbing.
With the exception of Guantanamo Bay, and, you know, that seemed to be surrounded by special circumstances, have we ever exported people, any people incarcerated in this country, to foreign countries?
So, like I said, there is a kind of statutory scheme for doing this, and it's not entirely unprecedented. But I think what is unprecedented is this administration basically saying, no, we don't have to comply with those basic tenets of the statutory process. We don't have to comply with the basic tenets of due process. Basically, whatever process we give you is the process that you're due. But that is not what the Constitution says.
And so since the Supreme Court has now allowed it, we will see that happen at a faster pace, correct?
We might, although you might have seen that that Supreme Court decision has actually spawned ongoing litigation from the district court judge, who is now trying to ensure that the migrants who are being held in Djibouti are still being afforded the notice and opportunity to be heard that that the Constitution gives them. And so now the administration is coming back to the Supreme Court actually on that issue. I do think that it is also worth kind of bringing up, since this really came out today, is the whistleblower report from the former DOJ attorney who was the one who admitted to the mistaken deportation of Mr. Kilmar Abrego, or Kilmar, I'm blanking on his name now.
No, Kilmar Garcia Abrego, yes.
Yeah, thank you. And basically talking about the ways that the administration is recognizing that its immigration policies are violative of due process and kind of thumbing its nose at the judiciary when it tries to hold them to these basic guarantees.
We're in interesting times, aren't we, attorney?
Certainly that. And I do think this all really just underscores the importance of having an independent judiciary that is that takes its constitutional duty seriously.
Thank you so much for joining us. Jaba is an attorney for the Institute for Justice.